Welcome back to The New You, Life After Losing Someone to Suicide. I'm Dawn.
And I'm Trisha.
And this is our second episode, and today we're going to be covering a variety of topics, including how you felt the first weeks and months after losing your loved one, and some of the feelings associated with that time, the funeral planning, and just kind of some raw emotions that you may have been feeling. So Trish, I'll hand it over to you.
I would say it generally, like, it felt an awful lot like an out-of-body experience, you know, from the first, when you first find out, you know, your whole world shatters into a million pieces at that moment. And everything after that, you know you're going through it, but the initial time, you have a checklist of items that have to be done, you know, for the police and the hospitals and the funeral homes. And so I think there is an autopilot factor that goes into that. But the first day, I could honestly say I don't know that it ever really, really sunk in. I remember driving home from the site, and we got home and my husband went to bed and my daughter was laying on my lap on the couch, and my telephone rang, and it was 4:30 in the morning. You know, and my very, very close family knew, and not a lot of anybody else had known yet, but the phone rang and it was the hospital they had taken her to. And I'm sure a lot of those people that are working at the hospital aren't trained in those situations, because they don't have to thankfully they don't have to deal with them excessively in small communities, more so lately than normal. But the man on the other end of the phone told me who he was, and for the life of me, I couldn't remember it, but he told me where he was calling from. He said, "I just wanted to know where you wanted me to take the body." I think that might have been my first eruption or outburst, I might say. Like, I had had less than 35 minutes to soak in that my first child of 20 and my daughter of 22 years was gone, and you called me and asked me where I wanted the body. And I said, "The body? You're talking about my baby." And I was a little frantic and screaming at him, I'm sure. I said, "I haven't even had time to process this. I have no idea what I'm doing at this point." And he said, "Okay, well, we'll give you a little bit and give us a call back." I hadn't even called her father yet to tell him that she was gone. And so at that point, we had to call him. And my youngest daughter, Paige, was on the phone with him because she felt like this was her, you know, she was going to do this. And she got it out one time. She said, "Morgan's gone, Dad. She's gone." And he kept, and it's just a state of disbelief, I think, for him. He kept asking her, "What? What?" And he kept making her say it over and over. And finally, I had to take the phone and I said, "Stop doing that. You can't do that to her." And, you know, we were talking about then what we wanted to do, and we were discussing back and forth. By the time him and I got done talking and I had called the hospital back, they had let me know that since I didn't decide when they called me, they had gone ahead and sent her to the funeral home there in town, and that I would have to arrange for someone to pick her up and move her if that's what I wanted done. Like, I had zero opportunity. They didn't give me a choice to do an autopsy. They didn't tell me how she passed. I was led to believe she passed one way and she didn't. They didn't tell me anything about anything. They just said, "She's here and you can pick her up." I had zero say in any of it. So that first day was just, it was like one blow after another, and you're having to call your ex-husband and tell him your daughter's gone, and then you're calling your dad, and then you're calling grandparents and your friends, and it was much like a being in the ring with Mike Tyson for a few hours. It was just one after another. And I think your brain has a funny way of protecting you in that day. like you're doing it and you're going through excruciating pain, but I really don't think that it has sunk in completely at that point. Do you think that's accurate?
I totally agree. And I agree with the fact that you talked about an out-of-body experience, because I definitely feel like you are on autopilot. When you first get that news, you're just like, what? I mean, I think initial shock, obviously. But trying to process that, and then we live in a pretty small town, I think both of us do, and once that news travels, your house is full of people and just the raw emotions that you're trying to deal with. Ours was later in the evening when we finally got the news, and so I think we had a little bit more time to process on our own later that night. It was still very devastating, but people were trying to do things and you were trying to process, and it was just like a fan throwing the dust everywhere and, you know, trying to go back and pick those pieces of dust back up, and it just doesn't work. I think initially too, you know, you have the funeral home calling you, we had to have an autopsy, so they were calling. The donor center called she was a donor for organs. And, you know, it just is, it's a whirlwind. And I think everybody's emotions are different. I mean, how I handled it was definitely different than my other children or my husband or my parents. And it is what it is. And I think that it's okay that we all handle it differently. I'm usually a very organized person, and, you know, I was trying to get the details and trying to understand, and, you know, everyone else has fallen apart, and I didn't have time to do that. I don't know how you felt.
Very much so. Like, I had the majority of my major meltdowns I did in my bedroom in private. I would say they found her at maybe around 3-ish, 3:30. It's kind of blurry for me, but by 6:30 in that morning, we had people showing up at the house. That night, one of my best friends, Erin, and her husband had stayed with us throughout the night and had been there, and they had picked Paige up from college, and she had gone home when we drove over there. And some of the goofy things that go through your head, when we got back to the house, she called and she says, "Do you want me to come over there? If you want me there, I'll be there." And I said, "Please come over." So she came over and she laid down in bed with me, and she just, you know, she held me when I cried. But some of the dumb things that pass through your head that you don't even think about till later, she says, "Tell me what I can do. You're going to have 100 people coming here soon. What can I do?" And I said, "My toilets need cleaned." And then later on, I'm thinking, who gives a shit if the toilet needs clean? But that's the first thing that came out of my mouth. I'm like, oh, there's going to be people here. My toilet's need clean. So you're definitely on you're destroyed and you're crushed. But in the back of your mind, you're like, oh, people are going to see those 4 dishes in my sink. And did I vacuum today? I probably should dust. The toilet's need cleaned. And it's like, what is wrong with you? And I was laying in bed and I'm thinking, there's definitely something wrong with you. Why are you even worried about the toilets? But she did, bless her heart. She did. She came and she cleaned the house while she was waiting for everyone. And she's like, I didn't know what to do. And that's what she said you needed. So that's what I did. And it's like, that's what friends are for. But it's to now we look back, I'm like, I don't know why that would be the first thing out of my mouth.
No, I totally agree. I was kind of the same way. And I was very lucky. The gals that were here just kind of took that over. And I think one thing that's important in looking back on that is, you know, having that person or people that can help you in those times and just know you enough to take charge. You know, I'm going to take care of the food that's coming in. I'm going to take care of the kids getting where they need to go if they need to. I'm going to take care of getting groceries or making sure you have toilet paper, whatever the case may be. It's just nice to have those go-to. And I know some people don't have that, and if you don't, you know, there are a ton of people that reach out and say, what can I do to help, or call me if you need help. And all I can say is, if you have someone that you trust and can utilize, do it. I think to take some of that burden off of the family at that time is great. Just do it in a way that's not overwhelming.
Definitely, because you have those moments where it's like, gosh, my house is so full and I just want 10 minutes to myself. But then you have those people that are holding you up even when you don't think that there's any way that you can do it yourself. So lean on them because that's what they're there for. And they are in their own form of hell because they're watching this person that they care about struggle so bad. And for me, I'm the person, I'm the fixer. Mm-hmm. I'm the handler. I take care of other people. So for me to not be able to even take care of myself is very disarming for everyone around me. For my husband especially, like, he was floundering. Like, he was just lost at sea. Like, what do I do for this person? It does for everyone. Because you don't know. And they struggle to find the words. So if cleaning a toilet is even easier than having a conversation, they will definitely do it. And so you have to lean on those people or you're never going to make it through those days.
I absolutely agree with that. Let's go into the funeral planning. What would you advise people who are having to go through this?
I would say that's, there's no right or wrong way. I think that morning I woke up and I just, like, I didn't have enough dread going on anyway, but I just dreaded walking in there because you're going in to plan how to lay your child to rest, and that's not something that we are equipped to even wrap our head around. It's not the natural order. It's not how things are supposed to go. And I remember getting to the funeral home, and I have a great support system. And my family was all there. And my nephew's father is there, who's been through this. And I thank the Lord every day for him, because I don't know that my family would have survived it. Bless his soul, he's had to do it twice. But he sat right beside us, because everything, when they asked me a question and I couldn't answer, like, I just couldn't find the words, I would defer to him, and he would, you know, he would nudge me on, like, it's okay, you can do this. But I remember, you know, your family sitting on the back wall, and they're all just there to support you and help in any way they can. And there's this table in the middle of an empty room, small table, and it's me and my husband and my two remaining children and Morgan's significant other, Logan, and her son, and we're sitting there. And he has this book of the funeral planning book. And he looks at me and he says, have you thought about, do you want cremation or do you want a burial? And I froze. I know I am never a person that's usually short on words. Anybody who knows me will say that. But my mind was racing, but it was empty all at the same time. I know I looked at him terrified, because it's not a conversation we have with our children. I always thought, I know what my kids want. I know what's best for them. In that moment, I can honestly say I had zero clue what she wanted. I had no idea. We had never talked about it. My kids know for sure what I want because I told them. You tell your kids that, but it's not a conversation you ever ask your kids, because you don't ever want to have to do that. It's not how it's supposed to work. And I remember sitting there, and in hindsight, I think my two children, they're adults, they're 19 and 21 at the time, but they carried a lot of this weight. And I do have some guilt for that, because I don't think I could have done it. So he's sitting there and he asked me, what do you want to do? And I was blank. I had no clue. And I looked at my son and daughter and I said, I don't know what she wanted. I need your guys' help. What do you want to do? And Paige looked at me terrified, you know, like she didn't know. And Chance is a lot like me. He's never real short on words. And he said, Mom, she's claustrophobic. She doesn't want to, you can't bury her. So that was our easy, you know, okay, so we're going to cremate her. So then you take a deep breath, like, whew, dodge that one. We got that one, you know, like we're doing good. And then he opens the book, and it's got hundreds of runes in it, and he says, what do you think you'd like? There comes the next punch. It's like, and I must have flipped through that book, oh, five or six times, and I know my husband was getting a little antsy, like, are you okay? Are you not okay? What do you need from me? And I looked at the funeral director and I said, I don't know what to do because I'm trying to decide where my daughter's going to spend eternity and nothing looks good enough for her, you know? So we flipped and flipped and I think Paige finally decided. So I did lay a little bit on that and then they, where do you want to do it? And I think Leroy might have decided that for me. It was just like I was there, but I was lost. So I was there. It was like the out-of-body thing. Like, I'm there and I'm participating, but I don't know where my mind is at all. And we get to, you know, you're picking out the funeral, the like the pamphlet, the folders, like, what do you want in the front? What picture do you want of her? And I'm looking at my mom, like, help me, you know, and she's falling apart because she sees that I'm struggling, but it's just something that as a parent, it's unfathomable to you ever to have to do this. We got through it because everybody kind of chipped in and after the fact, you know, and it was beautiful, but I don't think that I really participated much in the planning. If I'm honest, I think I just was so lost. We got to songs and I knew one song that I had to have and the rest of them, you know, Logan and her had a song that was Blessings by Florida Georgia Line and it described their life perfect. They had a Jeep and they lived on the river in a little farm and that was them. And so he knew right away that that's what he wanted to be in there. But definitely the funeral planning was probably harder for my children because I defaulted a lot on them. How did yours go?
Well, I guess I'm going to touch a little bit first. I mean, as a parent or family member having to do this, I really encourage you to have that conversation with your children, as eerie as that seems. Because I think for me, there was a lot of guilt and not knowing what she would want and having to make that best decision. And did I make the right decision? Does she care? I don't think she did. But I do think that in hindsight, I felt pretty guilty about it at first, and I don't anymore, and it's been 8 months. But I guess when I went in, we had our family with us as well, and it went fairly smooth, I mean, from what I can remember of it. But I know when we were looking at the pamphlets, that was a time where, you know, I knew her favorite color, so that helped, and I found something I thought that she would like, and then it got to a point where we had to look at the caskets, and he had asked, you know, what are you thinking? And I said, I'm thinking I don't want to put my child in a box. And I lost it at that point, and I still can remember that very vividly because it is not something you want to have to deal with. And you're right, you shouldn't have to bury your child before you. And it's just kind of very raw for me. I hope that I made the right decisions, and you know, you try to let everybody have some input in it. And we were kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place as far as, do we need the casket, do we not? We weren't sure if we would even be able to view her or not. And, you know, so there was a lot of decision making. So even if we had a plan, would it have worked? I don't know. But it fell together fine. And I guess everything came together and it was a beautiful moment to be able to share with the community and our family and just to say our final goodbyes together. So.
And I think, you know, we did the cremation and I think now we're 13 months out. And I see that my children are struggling with finding that peaceful place to connect with her or find a place where they can just go and be alone with her and think about her or talk to her or whatever they need. And so we did go purchase a plot at the cemetery and we are probably going to bury some of her ashes or all or something. So the kids and so everybody, and she has a son that's, you know, a year and a half old, and so he has a place to go and say, this is where my mom is at, you know, because I find that my children are migrating towards the place where she took her life. So when they want to be close to her, they go there. And everybody, like you said, everybody grieves their own way and they deal in their own way. But there's something about that place for me that is, I mean, that's where the worst day of my life took place. And for me to think that people have to go there to celebrate her or feel close to her, she's not there. She's not there, and I don't want her son to have to go there forever to feel like he's close to his mom. So maybe that's a me thing, but I think now that we're 13 months out, I've decided that I want a headstone, and I want a place that has her name for people to go and see that's not that place for me.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. We have not gotten to that point yet. We do have our plots purchased, and we're still working on a headstone, and hopefully by the one-year anniversary we'll have something placed. But I do, I think it is a place, if people want to go, that they can. I'm not a big one on cemeteries. I don't feel like our loved ones are there either. But I do agree that it's a place to go, and, you know, you can put your flowers out and you can show her the respect and what have you. And each person is different. I mean, I know a lot of people who go to the cemetery on a regular basis and put flowers there. That's not me necessarily. I know she's with me, and I don't need the headstone or the tombstone to do that, but I do want it available for those who need it.
And that's an important thing for people to realize too. The symbolism that you will develop or you'll find that means the most to you for your child or your loved one, everybody's is different. You know, like my daughter would like a headstone to go sit by so she can talk to her sister. Logan and Walker will go out into the woods, and Chance drives. He gets in his car and drives. And I do a lot of talking to Morgan in my car, but where I feel close or where I feel the most peace is water. I will go like a beach or a lake, anywhere where I can sit in the sand and I can hear the water crashing. That's where I feel close to her. Ironically, the name Morgan means of the sea, and I have always found great solace or comfort in water. And so that's the first, like last summer, the first summer without her, that's what I found myself doing. Like, I would be, just sit. I took a picture one day last summer, and I sent it to my mom, and it was a bunch of gulls on the edge of a lake in South Dakota, and I said, this is my church. It's just where I feel close to her, and that's, everybody is going to have that different place, and there's no right and there's no wrong. If it's in your home, if it's their car, if it's wherever you find peace, you have to take it, because there's days where it is really hard to find. Yeah.
Going back to the cremation part real quick, you know, we had Brittany cremated, and we have different, I guess, urns, and we have a small one. And for me, I can pick it up and take her with me on a trip, or if I want to spread her ashes here or there, I can do that. So for me, the cremation has been a positive, and just knowing that I have her with me, and obviously it's not the way we want our kids with us, but I know she's in a good place.
You said travel on the urn, so... It was early on. It was shortly after she passed. So she passed in February. So it might have been May. Chance was traveling to Wisconsin for a wedding for somebody he went to college with. And he made a mention that he wanted to take... I had split her up. When we did it, I got each of the kids their own urn and their dad. So we split it up so everybody could have their own. But... that Morgan never got to travel, and that's the one thing she really wanted to do was travel. And so I remember sitting at the table with the two kids, and we got to talking about it. And she'd never been to the ocean, and she'd never been to certain places she really wanted to go to. And between the two of them, they had decided that they would travel for her. And so we ordered, like, we went online and we ordered a less expensive urn. And we had some of the ashes put in that. So when one of the kids travels, or when my husband and I travel, we will take that urn. That's the traveling urn. We take that with. And everywhere we go, we geotag it, so we have the exact location. And you spread a little bit of ashes. And my son started this. And I don't know what struck him to start this, but he was at Chippewa Falls. And he was at this beautiful lake with the tall pine trees and whatever. And so he spread her ashes, and he saw this huge rock that he wanted. And it took him an hour and a half to get it back up to the top of the hill where he had parked. So he started everywhere he spread ashes, you geotag it, and you take a ton of pictures, and you pick up a rock, and you bring it back. So his flower bed, he has a bunch of rocks of where that, and we numbered them, 1, 2, 3, but also we're taking a big atlas, and we're putting a pin every place she's at. And the pictures will go in a scrapbook and explain where she's at, and what we did here and why we did that there. So they wanted to do that so when Walker gets older, they can take him on a trip and show him everywhere his mom has been. And he has something that he can follow that lets him interact with her and them in that way. So they're doing that, and that's part of their journey that they need for healing. And
I think that's absolutely amazing. I love the idea. And so what is the geotag? How do you do that, or what do you do with
like
that?
They just, if you go on, I think James uses Snapchat, where he sends me his location, and it'll give you the exact coordinates of where he's at. And then you know exactly where to put it on the map, where you can go back to the exact same spot the next time.
That's awesome. That is absolutely awesome. Trish, how about when you found it was time to go back to work? How, I know we had this conversation, and how you felt, were you ready to go? Did you need more time? How do you encourage others to follow what their body is telling them?
I think everybody's different, but I think the funeral was a turning point for me. We didn't really touch much on the funerals, but I don't know. I didn't remember a lot of it. I'll say that. Everybody said it was beautiful. I didn't remember a lot of it, but after, you know, you have that first week where you have a chore list and you have to have this done, and so you stay very composed, and your house is full of people you haven't seen in years, and your kids' friends that you haven't seen forever, and you're talking and you're busy, and you're not having time to just soak this in and decompress. And I think after the funeral and everybody else goes back to their life, and you're sitting in your house, your empty house, I think I stayed home. I took a total of 8 days off work, 8 work days. So it equated to about 2 weeks with weekends. But the days, the long days at home after everyone went back to their lives can be brutal. Like, then you don't have anything to occupy your mind, and you don't have the people around, so you don't feel like you have to take care of them or feed them or make sure everything's done. And that's when I fell in a pile. I would find that I was laying on the front room floor in the middle of the night, surrounded by your pictures, just wailing and sobbing. And or I would just sit on the couch with no TV or nothing on and just be basically spaced out. And for me, I'm not that person. Like, I will work a 15-hour day and I can come home, and that's fine. But to sit and just wallow, that was never going to sit well with me. I would rather go and try to be busy. And if I had to step out because I lost my composure there, that was fine. I just couldn't. I knew I couldn't stay cooped up at home being thinking constantly. So I knew I had to go back fairly soon.
And I think for myself, there was a lot of things to do. She didn't have a significant other, didn't have any children, so we had a lot of planning, a lot of trying to move her stuff back home, trying to get her bills and her finances and all of that in order. And that was, you know, I had 2 weeks after the funeral to kind of get everything done that I needed to before I had to go back to work. I teach at a school and didn't really have the option of, you know, taking a whole lot more time off because it would have been more work for me to do that. And I just felt like if I didn't go back now, I probably wouldn't go back. And so I just kind of took that leap. In hindsight, I wish I would have allowed myself a little bit more time because I don't think I gave myself that time to grieve. I kept busy and tried to just keep those emotions away. And I work at a Catholic school, so I know Trisha and I had talked about this earlier, that one of my first in-services, we were talking about Mary, the Mother of God, and how she, you know, lost her son. And as I'm sitting here through this in-service, I'm thinking, I want to get up, I want to run, I want to get out of here. And all my coworkers were surrounding me, and I thought, if I get up, I'm going to draw attention to myself. And I sat there, and I probably sweat right through my clothes. I just felt like I couldn't get up because I didn't want that attention, but yet listening to the conversation was very hard, and that was kind of my turning point. I mean, if I can get through this, I can do this, and I know I have a lot of support. There's a lot of people, again, you know, that said, whatever I can do, just let me know. And I don't even know what I can do for myself, let alone what they can do for me. And the things that need to be done, I don't know that they could have done anyway. So I think there's just a lot of emotions. And my best advice would be, do what you need to do to take care of yourself first. Because if you're not in a good place, you're not a benefit to others as well. And I think there's a big difference in dealing with the emotions and depression. And I don't think I got to that point where I was depressed. I felt very overwhelmed because I had so much to do and still have so much to do to try to find closure with all of this. And I think it'll get there. But, you know, when you talk about a grief period, what does that look like, you know?
I don't know if there's any, everybody says, oh, time, it gets better with time, it gets better with time. And I think there's, definitely it comes in waves. And I remember my mom telling me that right away, it's going to come in waves. Like, I thought maybe 4 or 5 months out, okay, I got this. Like, I've stopped the having complete meltdowns at work. I've stopped having to check out for lunch and cry in the car for 2 hours. And you do really good for a while, and then it takes the simplest thing. It could be anything. And it's just like, bam, you get hit by a truck again. And we're going to start over.
I remember somebody at the wake going through the line, and there was a few mothers that had lost children. And, you know, one of them made the comment, well, welcome to the club that you never want to be in. And another made the comment, you know, I'd love to say that it gets easier, but it doesn't. And I do agree with that at some point. It may get easier as far as the intensity and the amount of time that you spend grieving, but that pain never goes away. And, you know, I've talked to parents who've lost their children 20 years ago, and that pain is still there. They just handle it differently. It's, you know, I guess when people say, you know, like I've heard people say with miscarriages, well, at least you have other children. And that kind of frustrates me a little bit because, yes, they may have other children, but it does not replace the child that you just lost.
Yeah, they're not interchangeable. It's not like the Lego you misplaced.
Right.
It doesn't work that way. So I'm thankful I had other children because I really don't know if I would have been able to hold on if I didn't. You know, I remember shortly, I mean, it might have been day 2 or 3, and I was sitting at the table with my mom. And everybody always has divine wisdom after the fact, you know. people had brought a couple books about suicide, and it said some random things, and I was talking to my mom, and everybody had gone, and we cleaned up the house for the night, and she was getting ready to leave. And I looked at her, and I said, I never really understood when people told me suicide is contagious. And she said, what do you mean? I said, I didn't understand it. I understand it now. And I think I scared her to death because she said, what are you talking about? And I said, no, I'm not saying that that's my intention or that's where I'm going, but I'm saying if I had nothing else in this world but her, and she's gone, and someone told me if I killed myself right now, tomorrow I would be with her, that's what would make suicide contagious. I understand that aspect differently than I could have ever understood it before. Would I ever condone that? Absolutely not. And it never crossed my mind, you know, at that point to do that. But I could definitely put myself in a position where I could understand it differently.
And I think it's important for people to understand that. I'm 100% with you as well. I mean, if it weren't for my children, I probably would have followed her too. Again, am I suicidal? I don't feel like I am. I just, you're in that moment where you have so much grief and so much love for your child that you can't imagine life without them. And absolutely, I see how that could be contagious. But it doesn't help the people that are left behind. And that's part of the issue. You know, that's what we're hoping is that it's okay to have those feelings. It's not okay to act upon those. We're here hopefully to just at least, even if we change one person's life and help them understand that the feelings that they have are normal and your normal may be totally different than ours, but it's important that you have people to lean on. I mean, Trisha and I met by chance and she has been a godsend for me, and just being able to talk to someone who can relate, and I didn't know her from Adam at first, and I think that kind of helped in a way too. I mean, there's people in my own community that I could talk to, but you feel vulnerable. You feel like that's hard to do sometimes, and I think this has kind of given me an outlet to be able to do that and to maybe start processing some of those things that I need to.
It's definitely a different connection because, yeah, you have friends and you have people in your life and you have family that you know will sit and listen. But you also feel like you have to keep this composure that you've always had. And you know you have a job in the community and you don't ever want anybody to think you can't do this or that you're less of a parent or you're less of a grandparent. Someone sent me something very early on. And I can't, not verbatim, I can't remember this. The author was brilliant, and it was talking about a parent who lost his child to suicide, and it was like being in a hole. And the harder they shoveled, the further the hole went, and they couldn't get out. And a million people came by. There was a doctor that came by, and a neighbor that came by, and a family member that came by, and gave them all good ideas on how to get out, but nobody helped them get out. And it wasn't until another parent who lost a child came by that they figured out how to get out of the hole. It is a different connection. Like you and I, when we traveled, we live 6 hours apart. So we traveled to meet each other in a town in the middle, and we were getting a hotel room. And I think both of our husbands went, you're sharing a hotel room to do this? Like with a stranger? I'm like, yeah, why? Like, I don't think she's going to hurt me. I think I'll be okay. But I have to say, like, we spent a day and a half together, 2 days almost, and we talked about anything and anything under the sun, and we did our first podcast. But on that drive home, and I think we both had the same thing, it was like you're on the drive home and there was this huge decompression, or a lot of this weight was shed because you sat in a room in your pajamas with almost a complete stranger, and you talked about the one thing that is the most hurtful, destructive yet sacred thing to you in your whole entire life. And she got me. She got everything I said. She understood it. She could finish my sentences before they were even out. So if there's anything that I could stress to anybody going through this, find your people. You're going to find them in the craziest places, in the most unexpected places. But the key to your survival is to find those people the people that ask nothing more of you than to just be what you are in that moment. And they will sit there in silence if that's what you need, or they will kick you in the rear end and tell you to get up if that's what you need. But you need those people, because if you don't have them, you're never going to get through the day.
And I think it's also important to tell people what you need. Don't just hide it. If they don't know what you need, they can't help you. And if they do something to offend you, then let them know that so that you can work on changing that. But don't expect people just to try to understand when they've never been in the situation. It's not fair for you, and it's not fair for them either. So we just want you to be real with yourself and process those emotions, and hopefully we can help you through that as well. So we're going to put a wrap on episode 2. We hope that you'll be back to see us again or listen to us again. And if you have any questions or comments, please feel free to throw those into the comment box. Have a great day, everyone.
Thank you all.